Initially, what is very interesting is that in moments of, let's say, a bit of high pressure or panic sometimes that can happen, I realized very quickly that I was actually staying very calm. And in fact, I was finding it very almost satisfying that I could stay calm and help other people to go through it. And that was pretty natural. And I don't know if it's because of I was doing competitive sports in the back. I mean, since I'm very little, I don't know exactly why, but it's something I really, really enjoy because I feel like I can help others to see through it, to stay focused, and it doesn't affect me. That's in those moments of rush. You, on the other side, you need to, in general, I think you know, work never stops, but you can actually make it stop when you need to. And that's the importance of maybe having some other priorities on the side, on your personal side. And that's a bit also in my career decision. It's both need to match. I could not take a job somewhere where I don't see my personal life being in balance. Okay. So yes, I moved around a lot, but I always was able to see in all locations, all places that both could still be in a balance.
Welcome everyone. Today I am with Frédéric Potvin. This young woman is today the GM of the DAR region, then Germany, Austria and Switzerland for Pierre Fabre. And before, she had an international career at Pfizer and Novartis. What she did in short is she started in Australia, worked locally, and then went to the US where she discovered the global level, in particular in oncology. But the reason why she's here today is really her profile. She's what we can call an atypical profile. Because she doesn't tick all the boxes before getting a job. She doesn't answer to all the perfect profile expectations. And in particular on how she got her first position as a GM. I wanted to understand why this kind of profile is so much adapted to convince today in a changing world. I wanted to understand what they bring to the game, what they bring to the conversation. What I really like about this episode is the calm of Frédéric. You will hear a sincere conversation with a leader who doesn't have plans, but follows challenges and passion. You will learn about the concept of work-life integration. And I think this is a brilliant manifest for more women taking GM roles. I am Nathalie Lait, and you're listening to Pharma Minds. I wish you a great listening.
Hello, Frédéric.
Hi.
Thank you for the invitation. I never saw my profile as interesting, but I guess I'm happy to tell you a bit more about it.
Yeah, we'll see. And I'm sure we'll find interesting stories behind this. Frédéric, I would like to start with something which, interests me a lot. You started a job as a GM, and beforehand, you never had the P&L to take care of. You never had a business unit. I'm really going on into the technical things, but it is quite surprising. Can you talk a bit about this?
Well, first of all, I think there need to be a first time for everything, right? Because to manage people, to do any type of job. And so you rely on people who give you a chance, for sure. And then you also typically don't do it by yourself, but you have a very competent team that in my case, throughout my career, have had more expertise than I had. And that, you know, together will help you for like to be successful. The success is never made alone. But then I also, you know, if you don't have the exact experience, like I haven't been a GM before, but I have managed or planned for P&L when building teams, considering where you invest. So there's different aspect of previous roles that you can actually bring together to then know how to do it, or at least what question to ask, or who do you need to help you with?
Yeah, cool. And interesting, Frédéric. I'm starting directly into technical things because, you know, in our days, we often see the job as the with prerequisites, things to have done, and to follow the good steps to I don't know if it's have a good career, but it's interesting, yes, to understand really how you felt this. Because for you, it was something you could do?
Yes. I mean, you need a bit of confidence for sure. But what excites me is when I see a job description, I would say, or like a scope of a job, and I have at least half of the task where I'm thinking, I have never done this. That's for me is exciting. Mm. And I always say that, I mean, I started my career in Australia, and my biggest challenge there was that I didn't know the market, but I also didn't know the language very well. My English wasn't the greatest, which was the reason I actually went to Australia, was to primarily learn English. But, you know, if you don't know how to communicate, I think that's the biggest hurdle, right? So after that, I feel like everything else can be managed, can be overcome. You just need to leverage the people, bring the people on board, ask the right questions, focus on the right priorities, and not let yourself distract by all the small things, I guess. But yeah, so I that's for me exciting. I mean, I love a job or a challenge where I'm not sure exactly upfront what needs to be done, and I can discover this, where I also know that there's going to be many things I haven't really done yet.
Mm-hmm. And I have many questions coming in my head, but it is something maybe you are having more and more confidence than you start with 50%, you know, 50% you don't know, and more and more you want to take risk and to take things you don't know enough, and you know you will be able to do.
You mean in my future assignments?
Yes, or through your career, maybe you get more and more confidence to understand this.
Yeah, well, there hasn't really been a plan for. I mean, I remember when I started my first job. It was in Australia at Pfizer. In fact, I just started on a marketing assignment, and I looked up at the brand list in Australia, thinking, "Oh, if I could do this job in 5 years, that would be amazing. I would love to do this job." And so there's a bit more of a drive. I like a challenge, but it's my passion. So you know, the more I progress, the more I know what I enjoy doing, and I want to find jobs where I can do more of that. I love motivating people and teams. I love seeing people doing good, you know, doing good things and actually exceeding their own abilities, probably. Mm-hmm. And these are challenges where I don't necessarily know upfront how to do it, but I will uncover it throughout. So yeah, I guess I will continue to look for opportunities in the future where there is a challenge.
Yeah, and then if we come back maybe from the beginning, how did you understood that you wanted to learn new things, you wanted to see your career like this?
It came step by step. I mean, so I started in Australia, just first of all, was a marketing assignment. And then I didn't know many people in the industry. In fact, I come from a pharmaceutical background, so I worked in hospitals. I don't really had relatives or friends in the industry, so it was a bit by chance that I chose that career path. And I was always a bit driven by, maybe initially it was, I don't want to be in the norm. And I mean, studying in France, I think everyone had a very similar background. And so I wanted to do something different and differentiate myself. And so the choice of Australia came that I thought that speaking English fluently was an added value. But also personally, I was very intrigued and interested to maybe discover a new country and do something different. And I saw the risk as being very minimal. The only risk I had was that I took an assignment at Pfizer that at that time was unpaid. But okay. I did it as an investment for myself and also personal growth. I mean, trying to live in a new country, new culture, and learning a new language, for me, it was I didn't really see much of a risk after that. It ended up being a 5-year journey. I stayed there, and the one person I knew from the pharmaceutical industry before starting this role told me that I needed to carry the bag. That was very important. And so I did. I went out and became a sales rep. And for me, that was again a mm-hmm. challenge. I didn't know how to sell. I mean, I never mm-hmm. sold anything in my life before that. I felt my English was still not the best. And my territory was all the way down 500 kilometers south of Sydney, and it's very lonely and it's very tough, but I couldn't say I enjoyed it. No, it was really tough, but I appreciated the hard work for sales reps. And I think I still use it today when I make decisions on what do we need to do, how do we motivate, and how do we get a good execution mm-hmm. in the field. So I guess, you know, I like taking these risks for myself, but it needs to still match what I need on my personal side. Okay. I think that balance is important. Yeah. So
yes, and your personal side, yes, you also mean it can evolve. You start with something you want, and then a few years later, the balance change.
Yeah, I mean, maybe on the downside is that I can get easily bored about things. So I'm even in a similar, like in the same position. We're continuously trying to find new areas that we can do more of and improve and so on. But that's also because it stimulates me. And, and I'm hoping that other people around will also follow that same interest. So I never had really like to say, I want to be that position by then. I mean, apart that brand lead in Australia, I think that was my first objective. But, but I never had, oh, I want to be that level. I just wanted to continue to grow into initially was commercial roles. I then discovered that I really enjoy leading teams and motivating people. And actually, I get energy when I see other people doing very well and evolving as well. Yes. So, you know, it just went that natural direction. And then, and I also felt that it didn't impair me on my private life. I think that's also like sometimes important is your ability to manage stress. Is stress something difficult for you? And I always managed to keep a balance.
This. Yes, mm-hmm. You discover this and then you decide, okay, you need to balance this with some other aspect of your life or you need to deal with this or take jobs.
I don't know. I mean, initially, what is very interesting is that in moments of, let's say, a bit of high pressure or panic sometimes that can happen, I realized very quickly that I was actually staying very calm. And in fact, I was finding it very almost satisfying that I could stay calm and help other people to go through it. And that was pretty natural. And I don't know if it's because of I was doing competitive sports in the back. I mean, since I'm very little, I don't know exactly why, but it's something I really, really enjoy because I feel like I can help others to see through it, to stay focused, and it doesn't affect me. That's in those moments of rush. You, on the other side, you need to, in general, I think, you know, work never stops, but you can actually make it stop when you need to. And that's the importance of maybe having some other priorities on the side, on your personal side. And that's a bit also in my career decision. It's both need to match. I could not take a job somewhere where I don't see my personal life being in balance. Okay. So yes, I moved around a lot, but I always was able to see in all locations, all places that both could still be in a balance.
Okay. You consider this beforehand?
Absolutely. Yeah. I carefully evaluate it. And there's also a little bit of a very rational person, but there's something about following your gut. You know, does it feel right or not? And a couple of final decisions were also made on how I feel in a certain place and do I see myself living there to be able to do that job.
Yes, because it's you consider your job as a something for good for a company, but in the end, you're aware you're building your life.
Yes, and maybe I don't use so much for myself the word work-life balance. I would call it, it's in work-life integration. That's at least for me how it works. Okay. I find ways to fully integrate both. And I think it works very well with today's world because there is more flexibility and that everyone wants to do. And I don't have a personal need. That's true for me. I don't necessarily expect this to be true for many, but I don't have this need to fully cut off work. Because I enjoy it and it's not a stress factor. So I integrate it, but I do enjoy the freedom and flexibility to arrange certain things as I need sometimes. And that's my own balance or integration, I would say, to just be able to perform.
Yes, you would say? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. To perform, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we all have tough moments, whether it's in personal life or work life and so on. And we need moments to just get out of it to... You sometimes are not in a position to make a good decision or even to think clearly. And
you need help from the outside or need to
or take a break or say, look, today it's not about, you know, I need to work today until X, you know, time. This is not the what we should be proud of. Yeah. No, we should be proud about, okay, how did I do it? The quality. And that sometimes means, hey, this is not working right now. I can't think. So I'm trying to understand it and I will take a break or whatever it requires. And maybe I finish it later or do something at a different time.
Yeah. And how do you manage it with your teams? Is it something you encourage them to see their work life like this too?
Yes. It's actually interesting. I when I managed a US team a few years ago, I was still at Novartis, I hired a team and they were all coming obviously from different managers and had seen different ways. And they started telling me initially when they were coming in an hour late in the morning because they had something or so. And they kept telling me, I was like, oh, I have to leave early today. I have a doctor appointment or something. And I said, well, I don't need to know this. I mean, thank you for telling me. But first of all, I trust that you make the right decision to get the work done. And I will evaluate whether you realize if people are doing their job or not. And it's not about these 1 hour here, 1 hour there, that people are not physically there. This was before COVID, obviously. And then you have this a trusted relationship. And I think people also then are less stressed about maybe missing something. I mean, most meetings where you're at, there's way too many people than necessary. And so I think it relieves a little bit this own pressure that people have about missing out on information.
Yes, or do not having the confidence of missing the confidence of someone because of not being here. And
maybe because most of my managers always encourage that or trust in me as well. Mm. So it's something I learned and I'm giving back to other people. I'm trying to.
Yeah. I'm asking because I really feel it's a really a strength from you to be able to step back, and maybe if it's to understand better or to give the right clues or really put the right effort at the right moment.
Yeah, and in the end, it's always a balance again between, I mean, you do not need to have the perfect initiatives. What is important is the people behind, right? So it's a balance between, yes, think about your priorities, your initiatives, but you really need to bring people along on the journey. Because if people don't believe, and this is everyone, this is from the person who is any of your teams in the office, but also your field people, right? So everyone needs to believe and follow and so on. And so that requires a lot of effort. You can't just come and say, hey, here it is and figure it out.
Yes, and we are working in pharma and you have a purpose because it's for patients.
Yeah, it requires a lot of work. And I think that is important to think about it. And I'm not saying I always have the perfect solution, but it's definitely something that you learn to get better and better at as you evolve in your career.
Yes, and I really think the more you maybe try and experience this, mm-hmm. the more you want to help the other to be confident in this.
And I think what helps, at least from my experience, is having dealt with different culture and living in different countries. You start to become a little bit more sensitive also to what people may need to hear, want to hear, or what the individual feelings are. And I mean, in the end, it's all how people feel about something, at least to get them along the journey. And so I think very few people necessarily remember all the words, but they do remember if it was a positive feeling or if they felt, you know, not so confident. So yeah, I think that definitely continues to help.
Yes. And is it in the words you use? Is it in the act?
Yeah, but you need to, I mean, it needs to come, I would say, it needs to come from the heart. If you don't mean what you say, I mean, I don't think no one will believe you really. Oh, you can see it. And I think everyone has experienced maybe listening to someone talk or a conversation and you're like, well, I'm not sure this person really believes in what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And so do you truly stand behind it? Can you actually explain the why, the reason behind it that people can understand? And also showing that you care. I mean, people want that someone cares for them. You might not be able to do everything they're asking for sure not.
Yeah.
But you can show you care and try to understand for sure.
Yeah. Yes, and maybe lead as example too.
Mm-hmm.
Because you show.
Absolutely.
You show the same from yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. And if you want to come back maybe to this different experiences you get, like the way of thinking in Australia or the way of thinking in the US, and then your I don't know if it's back, but you're in Europe. Can you explain a bit how your way to act evolves and how it's?
I mean, it's there are cultural differences, of course, and I think you always have to think about. So also are some of the people, associates, more international? So there's a very wide range of individuals. But you know, there's styles, and this goes a bit I'm not going into stereotypes here, but for example, you know, I grew up and I studied in France, but my mom is German, so I got some German influence. But now living in Germany, I'm realizing, you know, I'm actually not German, right? So there's still some cultural difference, but that makes it very interesting to try and to understand and be able to communicate effectively. And the US was even something different, right? So US is a system where there's a lot of reward and praise compared to what maybe I had experienced in France. So I had to adapt. And I even told my team at that time, which were mostly Americans, to say, hey, you need to help me here as well. I mean, I'm not coming from background where giving praise for like what I would say is normal things is just usual, but I'm trying to, right? So, but helping, just explaining or being open about it and also, yeah, being honest about it, I think it helped and it's interesting. And now I'm coming back to Germany and I feel like, okay, I'm giving feedback in positive feedback as well, and people don't know what to do with it. So.
Feel like comfortable.
Sometimes it's a very interesting journey for myself too.
Yeah, and for the people too, because
absolutely
you bring some differences. And maybe is that the fact that when you come in and you're completely new from like the culture or whatever, you ask different questions maybe, or.
Yeah.
Is that a way you, which, so, how do you make it?
Yeah, but I think in general, I mean, most of my roles I took was in countries where I didn't know, right? So I didn't know the market in details, at least, or not deep enough. I worked in global, but you don't go to dive as deep as if you work in a country. But I think it actually allows you then to ask the right question and go deep in the questions because you don't know. So you actually want to learn. And people open up to you. And I used to always say when I started a new role, and so I'm doing my little market research. But that's basically you go around, you talk to anyone, and you suddenly find these common themes that come back, and you ask questions, and people start to rethink as well how maybe they have been doing things or why things are a certain way. Sometimes we just accept, oh, this is the way it is. Yeah, but let's why is it that way? I mean, help me understand. And so... And it maybe doesn't have to stay that way. So for me, sometimes, you know, we want people to come with all this experience, understand the market extremely well and so on. And these are very important people. But I do think also having someone that might be new is fresh is good because it allows for more questions and for deeper questions.
Yeah. So that's maybe something you're experiencing now?
Yes.
Yes, because you're in Europe on markets... Most of them you don't know.
And I mean, now, but even in previous roles where I often was in a situation where I had a team with deep expertise in whether it's a disease area, a market, or a combination of both, or in their function. And I came in comparison, I had the least experience, which is also, it's interesting how then you position yourself to add value. But I had this many, many times. And I thought it was actually a very good combination. So you can't have only people who don't know the market for sure. Not.
Yeah.
But when you're in that way, I felt like, you know, I had the right expertise around me. I could ask questions and help them also to think further and support them in that way, maybe.
Yeah. Which is, interesting because they can go further and being motivated too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
To have someone who is really... also caring about what they think. Yeah. And but you also need to have people who trust you, who rely on you would be the right person to start with, like less background.
Yes.
And to be able to be at their level a few months after. Or
yeah.
How did you live with this? Did you experience?
it's I always say when you interview for a role, I do think both sides interview each other, right? So you get interviewed and to understand whether you are a good fit for the role and bring the right experience. But then as a candidate, you also figure out whether you want to work for that person that might be your manager afterwards. And I think that's very, very important, right? It should be on both ways. And I always used to say, if you are looking for a very standard profile I take the example of the US, right? So with X amount of years of experience having managed a US sales team and this, I'm not your person. I'm definitely not. And this is not actually negative. It's just that if the business or the team needs someone that is fits exactly that image,
okay,
you're better off with someone else. However, if you actually want someone who can maybe rethink certain aspects, will really dig deep into some details, maybe think a bit differently. That's what I do. And I love when there's not really a blueprint, right? So there's a lot to be understood and together with a team, you can really build things, I guess. So it really depends. I mean, I have missed out on roles because that's definitely not what they were looking for. And that's okay. Yeah. That's totally okay. It wouldn't have been a fit anyway.
Yes.
But it's not, I mean, you know, I was in roles and often indeed a bit younger than my peers, but that's okay too. And I never had issues. I mean, there was a couple of times maybe, and that's okay. And in fact, it motivates me a bit more to break that image, to say it's not about the amount of years. It's not about how you look or who you are or what it is. It's about what you bring to conversation, what you bring to other people, and the totality of the team rather than just one person.
Yes, yes, in the end, yes. But it's an adventure.
Yes.
Yes, you need to try to bring something which is completely new, to invent and to push the expectations.
And that's the exciting thing, I guess, in the pharmaceutical world, is that there's so many possibilities to do a career, whether that's different functions, different geographies. I think that's really the unlimited possibilities that make it so exciting and interesting, in fact.
Yeah. And did you build your career with a plan like this?
No.
You wanted to?
No.
It seems a bit...
I don't really have a plan. I think we were just talking before, but there's this typical question that you get usually, which is, what do you want to do in 5 or 10 years? And I have never been able to answer it. I know in what direction, I know what I want to do more of, but I've not been able, and I don't want to be able to put a certain position name on it. I've never been able to anticipate where I would be in my life. I mean, did I plan that I would be 5 years in Australia, 8 years in the US? No, absolutely not. And now after living in New York, I'm in the south of Germany. No, I did not plan any of that, at least not like 5 years ago. But I had a trajectory, right? I had a bit of, okay, I want to do a little bit more of that. And yeah. I think this is the experience now I'm missing, and I would really want to actually learn and develop more. So there is... there's definitely that. And that's something where, you know, also exchanging with mentors throughout my career has been very helpful to just get some different thoughts on it. So, but the concrete plan, no, but that's okay. I don't need that.
Yes, you feel comfortable with this.
Yes.
Then you don't like when someone asks you what's your 10 years plan.
No, it's not that I don't like it. I just don't know how to answer it because this is a personal trait, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of routine and being able to anticipate everything on the long term in general. That's true also in my personal life. And so I like to keep a few doors open.
Yes.
Options, you know.
Yeah. So. Yes. And is it related on the thing that you also want to feel the way you are at when you need to take your next step or when you need to take a job? Because sometimes... you can plan something, but you can realize, I saw maybe you don't want this in life now.
No, absolutely. And I mean, there was a whole period, even within Novartis, where I progressed and I didn't really formally interview because it just happened, right? I didn't say, I want to have this job next. It's just, okay, I think this would be good for my development. It just came together, I guess. I've also said no to roles before because the role itself was fantastic, but it didn't necessarily match where I could be or live personally. So that you know, balance or integration is super important. Okay. So and to say no also is, you know, you can see a big title, an interesting job, but it's important to think about whether it would work on professionally and personally as
yes,
well.
Yes, you already talk about this, but it means you're definitely ready to say no to something if you're...
Yes. I mean, that's...
Just imagine your life.
I actually think it's part of being able to perform at work. If you're not happy and fulfilled personally, it would be difficult, right? Long term. I think short term, yeah, but long term, it's difficult. And I think you lose maybe also some credibility for the people locally, right? So there is that. You have to... I have been, you know, in the past offered roles where you would be responsible for business in a country, but you could live in another country. There's nothing to do with that country, right? So that, for me, that's very difficult because what do you tell the team? Yes, country is good enough to work, yeah. but not to live there.
Yeah.
I find this very difficult.
Yeah.
So there's that. It's also part of my values, right? So if certain things, decisions go against what I would say are my values, I would rethink my decision or rethink the offer.
Okay. And you were talking about your mentors. Yes, who are they? How did you find them? No, I don't need names, but it's a
no yes, names.
No, as you want. But no, and most of all, what did they bring you?
Yeah, I think I had mentors with the majority of my career, or quite early on. I was still in Australia, at least, and I was a brand lead. So, yeah, quite early on, you can get different types of mentors. You can have formalized mentors that sometimes come with a program, or you have just because they were set as your mentors and someone helped you or so on. And then you have informal mentors. And informal mentors is just that it's people you trust and you just every now and then have exchanges. It can be on both ways. And I think both are very, very important, right? I also think that having mentors, you don't need to have necessarily the highest, like the person with the highest position as your mentor. It doesn't, it's not necessarily the best person. So a good mentor also has really interest to be a mentor, because it's not just to get some bonus points or I don't know, but that's very it's very important. I had one mentor for 6 years, actually even a bit more than 6 years, and that really became an exchange. I mean, I think it was every 6 weeks we had like a setup meeting, and I would really think every time, what do I want to discuss. And my big focus at that time was, or throughout that time, was a lot around leadership questions. So for example, this is a situation, without going into names, but this is how I handled it, but I'm not sure. I mean, maybe there's otherwise. And you can really bounce back ideas and thoughts. And so it helps you to evolve and maybe next time handle the situation maybe even better, more confident, whatever it is. So
okay,
that's
in a regular basis, mm-hmm, like for daily
yes.
daily.
And I would
work.
Pick situations that were either already happened, sometimes it happens fast, or that were ongoing, and how to manage, whether it's people, it's interactions, it's business decisions and so on. And I picked, so in this example with this mentor, it was someone who was not directly involved in the work I was doing. And I think that's important because there's no internal conflict of interest, I would say. So you can also have really a relationship of confidence. And it's confidential as well. So there's no, like, I feel like it's going to impair me. The interesting part is that you have something called reverse mentorship. And this is where more senior people also get something out of their mentee or the person they're interacting. And I think that actually naturally sometimes evolves, is that the exchange is happening. So a mentor shouldn't be telling you what to do. It's someone who helps you to frame your ideas, maybe think through something. Is a sounding board and so on. So that's, for me, was always the most valuable ones. And maybe there's a few people that throughout my career guided me. It was when you work in big corporation, reorganizations are happening. And so a couple of times, I think I was in a situation where I got a change of managers pretty much overnight, I would say, pretty fast. You get an email on a Friday, or you're being told on a call, in a larger call, I guess, starting Monday or starting next week, you have a new person there. So internal moves. And there were always, I think, consistently through my career, like a couple of people, two people who have always reached out and said, are you okay? And you know that, are you okay? And yes, I was okay. But I think to know, okay, there's people who
you could genuinely care about me.
It does actually, it does do something with you. It helps you with confidence through tough moments. It's also something you want to give back to others then. Mm. And that, you know, yes, was definitely noticeable for me. I had other people who were maybe not formal mentors, but have supported me in some of the steps and also told me, hey, you need to be picky in your choice. And being allowed to be picky. I mean, as you said, my resume or my career path is atypical. And so you meet a lot of people also who will tell you that you're missing steps and you need to do X, Y, Z. And you don't have that. Or your profile is not fitting criteria, some job description. So you get a lot of that also. But when someone that you feel is a role model, at least, also tell you, hey, you can be picky, you know, don't settle for something you don't want to really do as a next step, but do something you're really excited about. It just, I don't know, supports you in your decisions. Because you sometimes, you know, when you are early in your career, you're like, oh, maybe I should not. Yeah. I should really do what people tell me to do. But it's not. If you don't want to do it, it's not a good choice.
Yeah, you feel you made the good choice for you, but the other give you other advices and you feel challenges. And
I mean, I do think that, you know, I also tell people, I mean, I've managed before, so on, that were early in their career, to say it's very good and interesting to talk with, you know, people about their career and ask them what they've done, why they've done it, but and then, you know, and try to see how it resonates with you. But what I've learned, at least, is that anyone you ask about career advice typically tend to give you the career advice or the path they have followed. And it's okay, right? But you still need to basically make the choice of, okay, what is right for me? Because we're all different. We all have and also have different personal needs. And so what works for one person doesn't necessarily work or is right for the next person. And so, but that's okay. I think the pharmaceutical industry offers so many options and so many career paths, and only you are in charge of it. And I think it's okay to look for that role where you say, okay, I feel really excited about it.
Yeah. And did you add, also this conversation with your mentors when you had like a picky choice, you name it. And to be confident enough to apply or to share this story or to explain a story.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, career discussion were also part of what I was doing with mentors, and I was openly sharing, you know, why or why not. And we sometimes also disagreed. It's okay, right? Because no one knows what is right for you in your personal life. So that's your decision.
Yes, they can give you advice.
You need to live with your own life, and this is your life. And so now on the professional side, yes, they can give you the pros and cons. And again, a mentor is not supposed to tell you, I mean, they don't give you the answer necessarily, but they will guide you and discuss and give you different options. And so you then have to do the work to put the two together on the personal side and work on the professional side and say, okay, is this the right role for me? Do I really want this? I think it's so important, because not being fulfilled or happy or excited, it's going to be tough in the role. And as you progress in your career, there are roles you do for longer and longer and longer, which that's what it should be. And so you can't be just thinking, oh, yeah, it's going to be okay for 2 years. No.
Yes, you expect to stay longer in this job. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and it's not necessarily fun to move all the time. I mean, the job become, as you progress so much, I mean, there's no limit to what you can do, really. You can look into so many areas and do so many things that I don't think it gets boring, I would say, that easy. But starting again, you know, there's people to bring along. It takes time, right, to make these impact and changes. And I think that's what is fulfilling in the end, is to look back and say, okay, did I actually have an impact? Did I help people? What did I do?
Yes, it's an interesting question, because most of the time you are pushed to change, like after 3 years or something, and maybe everyone in this world is trained to think about the next step after.
But there's fewer next steps as when you progress, you know.
We can still ask you to move, to change. How do you think of this? You change every few years.
So my resume I have indeed, but it was people were asking me and they were for 8 years based in the US, 5 years the job were in Australia, and then 8 years in the US. I think if you have to physically move, it becomes, you know, it's not easy. I mean, when you physically move, it takes at least 3 months just to settle into a country, mm-hmm. set up, you know, just things, necessities. I mean, being able to figure something out. So it also takes the onboarding in general. I mean, until you can really have an impact. If it's a new company, I mean, you change a lot of parameters. So that's something to take into consideration. When it's within the same company, I think the switch can, you can have an impact faster indeed, mm-hmm. sometimes. But I've also in the past have said no to roles that I was offered, and then I was convinced otherwise, because it's not just about a title. It's about, so what is really the scope of the role? A title doesn't mean anything. I can find 10 people with the same title and they do very different things. And I think that's important. And so part of it is, you know, what's your own energy and drive? It's very important to have that energy. Who you work with, I mean, and do you have that freedom of coming with ideas from your manager? And is it going to be supported, right? So that is important, at least for me. These are like all...
Yes, you mean, having also enough place to change the things, to make the things happen. And
I love when everything is not in place the way it should be, and I can... You know, I always say, I was like, well, there's a house, but it's not quite straight. Let's you know, figure out how to put it in place. I love it. But if you don't have support, right, it's going to be very difficult. Support meaning that there's interest to make things change. It's going to be very difficult. You also need the time to bring the people along the journey.
Enough time, but not too long to be, to be maybe bored or not give enough value.
No, absolutely. But it will take longer and longer the bigger the roles are, because just the impact or the size of the teams is bigger and so on. So
The stability also you want to bring.
Yeah, and you want to see the result of what you do, right? So you put certain things in place. I mean, I was saying that one of the most rewarding experience I had just personally was it was at Novartis. I worked on an acquisition of a product in hematology 2016, and then I prepared the launch on the global side, but quickly took on the commercial lead in the US to build a team and to launch it. And you really, I mean, I think it's a unique experience to see it through from the very beginning, where you identify an opportunity for a company. I mean, pulling through a deal is very rare. So there was luck, probably. Need a bit of luck in life. But then being able to really implement what you have visualized from the beginning. And obviously things have changed as we understood it more. But that was, and really see the launch through, like, I think I stayed in the role up to a year and a half, a year and a half after the approval in the US. So you really see the results and everything. And that's, I didn't want to move earlier. I was this was great.
Depends on context.
Yeah.
I would like to understand maybe how it was to be a young woman, and you take a role with responsibilities. How is it? Was it always easy or?
No, it's not, but
because we can say in pharma, okay, we have a lot of women and it's okay, but.
Yeah, but it's true that I think at the general manager level, maybe it's still a little bit sparse. I mean, there's not that many women, right? And I think...
Because here, you're in Germany, Switzerland.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, but I just look at Germany. It's definitely, there's some opportunity for improvement, I guess, in general. But I think the problem is also, do people want to do it? Do women want to do it? It's not an easy question. I think everyone is different. But I think in general, I mean, I've had a lot of support, but I've also encountered throughout my career and still, you know, where you, there's like these people would call it a bit microaggressions, you know, in the background. It's like, and it's a bit more, you know, you're young, you don't have 20 years of experience. Wherever you are, I mean, you never match everything, right? So the image I was projecting was not necessarily what initial people were expecting in different settings, and that's okay for me. For me, it was more a source of actually energy to say, well, you know, I can change things, and I can laugh about it and so on. So I it never really brought me down or something, which is interesting. But I know for many people it's not the case, and I've been on some women leadership programs and where I met a lot of other women, and and it's been tough for them. And I think their experience doesn't really necessarily reflect my experience. Yes, it's the same experience, but I didn't necessarily perceive it that way.
Yeah.
Or had any major, I mean, I hear it, I see it and so on, but I will laugh about it or actually just discuss it and say, hey, we need to, this is not okay to say that or so on. And it doesn't, it happens, you know, it's here and there. It's not common, but I think there is definitely in general a need to make leadership position more attractive to women and help them throughout it. Because I think there's a lot of talent out there. I think there's a lot of benefit to have diverse teams. And I think I'm trying to still understand a bit, in, even in Europe, what the image is like, how can we support more women? And it doesn't mean doing such job that you have no life anymore. Absolutely not. There's a way to really manage your life to combine it.
Yes, you mean attractiveness can be, yes, on the balance with, yes, private life and work, or it can be also with the image, or...
Yeah, you can absolutely. I mean, you need to. I mean, not everyone wants to do it. That's also okay, right? I mean, being a GM, you are on the... I mean, you're there, you're alone. You have to be willing to do that, right? Or do you want to be an organization part of a larger team, meaning with peers? You know, so it depends. I think even, well, today's world, how you manage a team is more as a leadership team, as a team component anyway. But still, you know, you're still the GM, and not everyone wants to do that. But it doesn't mean, aspiring to these roles doesn't mean that you have to be workaholic. It's not true.
Yeah.
There's absolutely good not true. And this is the thing, I have been asked this in the past. Yes. It's like, are you a workaholic?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I am. No, I
how
love...
How would you describe yourself?
I love what I do.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely passionate what I do. And I had a short career break, I mean, between two jobs, basically. And I was still, you know, following what's happening in the pharma world because I'm truly, generally passionate about it. I think it's fascinating, especially the oncology space, how quick it's moving. I love being in touch with, you know, physicians and so really staying close to what's happening in the market. But again, I integrate my life, and that's important in my choices. And so people always ask me, what do you want to do ultimately in your career? It's like, I don't know. Again, I don't know many things about that. Yeah. I always say I don't know. But it's also like, as long as I keep enjoying what I'm doing, I will continue to progress and take more responsibilities because I like it, I enjoy it. And as long as I can still do what I love doing outside of work. And so far, this has been the case for the last almost 15 years. And so, you know, let's see when it stops. But that's the balance that I want to keep.
Yeah. Yes, really interesting, Fred. I think it's a good conclusion for our discussion. Yes, about, yes, the integrated life is, for me, a new concept. And yeah, interesting to think about it. Thank you, Frédéric.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. I hope you gained valuable insights. Want to keep chatting? Drop your comments on LinkedIn. You'll find the link in the episode description. Got ideas or guest suggestions? Message me on LinkedIn. And hey, if you want to support the podcast, give it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. That means the world to me. Catch you soon for more exciting episodes. Stay curious, stay inspired, and stay tuned to Pharma Minds.